Hey, welcome to another episode of Conversations with John. Actually, this is the first episode, so sorry for the confusion there. But with me is Daniel Boyd, who is a movie nerd like myself, as well as a filmmaker with a couple of movies under his belt. So, hey, how you doing, Dan?
I am wonderful, John. It's great to be on your show, man. I didn't realize this was the inaugural episode, so I'm quite honored here.
Yes. Yes, it's the very first one.
Very nice.
So, can you introduce yourself to the audience and kind of give them an idea, basically, who you are before we dive into any more deeper stuff?
Absolutely. As John said, my name's Dan Boyd. I'm a writer, director. We do have a couple films under our belt as a production company. Our company is Drunken Yinzers Productions. We've directed such terrible films as Jagoff Massacre. We recently did a remake of Blood Freak. There was an attempt at a Jagoff Massacre 2, but there's a lot of stories about that. We may delve into that a little later. But yeah, and I'm also the proud owner of a gigantic horror collection that spans almost 10,000 movies. So yes, I am a huge horror nerd.
Hey. Excellent. Before we get into you, Dan, the filmmaker, I want to ask you, what are the movies that interested you most as a fan?
Well, I mean, I started out as far as horror movies go with slasher movies. My mom was a huge fan of the slasher movie genre. So she, when I was a little kid, during the video store era, got into Friday the 13th. Actually, the first movie I ever saw was Uli Lomel's Boogeyman. So, yeah, there was a lot of slashers then, but as I got older, I started loving Giallo. I love Dario Argento, Lucio Fulci, the Italian filmmakers, all those kinds of things. But yeah, my earliest memories are just, you know, just like most people our age, running around looking for cool pictures on video shelves and, you know, just picking movies that way and, you know, hoping you found something you liked.
So, you know, as a collector, you say you have a massive collection. I know you actually have a massive collection. I always like to ask people, do you have a preferred format? Do you have something that you'd rather watch on a certain format?
I don't know if there's a preferred format. Pretty much everything I have at this point is on DVD and Blu-ray. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff I kept from when I was a collector of VHS. And it's not that I prefer that format. I just think there's something about the box art, you know, it was bigger and popped a little more during that era. And I don't know, it just seems like when you have a DVD of something is a little lost on that whole, you know, box art thing. So I do have a lot of VHS, but mostly that is, it stands just for decoration and, you know, making my horror collection look a little cooler. One of my prized possessions, actually, is I have an original Faces of Death 2 clamshell, and I love the damn pictures art on that box.
Did you manage to pick up any VHS, like when the local, because I know that's how I got a lot of my favorite ones, is when the local video stores started closing, which is RIP mom and pop video stores, but.
Absolutely, got tons. There were so many video stores in downtown Pittsburgh, and they were mostly those places that were really kind of shady. You know, they had nothing but horror movies and porn in the back. And those seemed to be the first ones to go out of business. And me and my buddy Chuck Connors, who has been an actor in all of our films, used to go down there. And, you know, as they were going out of business, we'd scour these places and just pick up old big box titles and things like that. I remember I got an original Blood Freak, Blood Feast, rather. I'm sorry, which I ended up losing, sadly, But yeah, I was so excited about that. But it was kind of a bittersweet time because, you know, you're watching all these wonderful places go out of business. But, you know, it wasn't like we were able to really get too many pornos from places anyway. We're only in high school at that point.
Well, you know, it's funny because I don't think people realize back in the day it got so homogenized in the 90s. But if a lot of the mom and pop stores, you know, yeah, they'd rent the new releases and the big Hollywood stuff, but the things that would stay on the shelves and rent again and again and again were really horror and porn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Exactly. Yeah. And you could tell you get some of those tapes, even back then, you know, as a kid and a teenager watching them, you could tell, like, how many times these tapes have been watched. The video quality is just down and down every time you rent it. So, but yeah, and it was funny, too. Like, you're right, you'd see you know, a title like Blood Feast or Snuff we used to see all the time. And it did. It just, those titles were always around. They never went anywhere.
All right. What's the tape that you rented the most growing up from the video store?
All right. This is a weird one. There's actually a pretty good story behind it, too. Zombie Lake.
Wow. Really?
The Jean Rollin movie. So that started as one of those things where I love the cover art from it. And so I rented it. But if you ever seen Zombie Lake, now you got to remember here, I'm about 12 years old, maybe even a little younger than that. I could have been maybe 10. And my mom was a firefighter. So she worked long hours and a lot of nights. And she used to just take me to the video store. We'd rent a stack of movies and I'd take them over to my grandma's house. Well, Zombie Lake starts out with a very attractive Italian woman who goes for a skinny dip in the Zombie Lake. And it is a very interesting camera angle that they kind of go under her for a little while there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, as a 10-year-old little horn dog, that was probably the tape I rented most, you know. Aside from that, as far as like a quality movie, it would probably be anything from the Friday the 13th series. Me and my mom both loved that series. And yeah, constantly we were renting it over and over and over again.
Cool. So let's talk about Dan the filmmaker.
Yeah, all right.
You're from Western PA, Pittsburgh area. So, you know, for somebody who may not know exactly where the name of your company, Drunken Yinzers, came from, do you want to maybe explain to them just briefly?
Well, a Yinzer is just anybody pretty much from this area, Western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, and, you know, all the surrounding suburbs. That talks in a certain kind of dialect, and they refer themselves as Yinzers because everything here is Yinz, which is kind of a shortened version of you ones, I guess. So, you know, you'd say things like, hey, Yinz going downtown tonight, something like that. And it was just kind of a term for a group of people or any one person. The dialect is very strange. And I know, John, what you're going to get into in the next questions.
Before we get to the actual movies, I wanted to ask you real quickly what you enjoy the most, because, you know, being an independent filmmaker, you have to wear a lot of hats. You direct, and I know you've co-directed with Tim Gross, acting, you've acted in the movies, and you also are responsible for writing the movies. Right. So which of the three that I just mentioned in that creative process do you like the most?
Writing. Absolutely. I have always been a writer. Horror was not the only thing I've written. I've also written comics throughout the years. A few unpublished novels. But that's how the whole thing started. When Tim and I first met, he kind of came up or talked about Jagoff Massacre. And I didn't really know what it was. It was just something that was tossed around in his books a bit. And he said it was an idea for a movie. And I was like, all right, I'm going to write the movie for you. So I did that. And the other hats just kind of came with doing that. He didn't want to direct it himself. And, you know, I decided to step in and help him with that. And as far as the acting goes, I would much rather spend all of my time behind the camera. But as anybody who's an independent filmmaker knows, things just don't work out sometimes, and some days you just got to step in front of the camera because somebody didn't show up, or, you know, any number of a million problems that can possibly go wrong when you're doing these things.
Let me have a follow-up question to writing the scripts. I like you, I watch a ton of independent films. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes I see that they shoot themselves, the filmmaker will shoot themselves in the foot by writing something they clearly don't have the budget to shoot, and they try it anyway. When you write, do you already have locations and perhaps props and cast in mind, or do you try to fill it after the fact?
It kind of depends on certain characters. The character is written, you know, when I'm thinking of a certain person, and there's some, you know, most of the main characters I think in our films, we already have someone that we really want to play that part, and it's kind of written for them. It doesn't always work out that you can get that person, or, you know, something goes wrong and they need to be replaced halfway through the movie. But I think as far as what you were saying about trying to do things that you couldn't possibly do on that budget. That's where Tim Gross really comes in and helps me a lot, because I write way above any budget we could possibly achieve. We need to be like Hollywood film directors to do some of the stuff I put in the scripts. And Tim, I think, is the person who goes, okay, Dan, we can't possibly do that. We're going to have to work around it a little bit.
All right. I need to talk about the first thing I saw from you guys, the first thing you did. And I'm, you know, to be 100% transparent with anybody listening, I'm a huge fan of your first movie, Jagoff Massacre. And I was I was one of the people that kept after you guys and nagging you for, I wanted the sequel. Cause it kind of left it where you could have a sequel to it.
Right.
But just the title Jagoff Massacre, this is another Pittsburgh thing. Can you explain to our listeners what you actually mean by jag off?
And that was the part I knew you were going to get to. So we'll go through a little history of jag off here. So a jag off can be a lot of different things if you're from Western Pennsylvania. The most commonly used, and I guess the way we would have used it in the title for the movie, a jag off is a person who's wronged you in some way, as in, guys, you know, fuck that guy. He stole my money. He's a jagoff. I don't really know the exact origin of the words. I assume it has something to do with jackoff, but you know, it's one of those mysteries that will never be solved in Pittsburgh. It seems like it's just always been here, but there's many variations of jagoff at this point, and a lot of people have shortened it to just say that someone's a jag. Like, instead of saying jagoff, you go, oh, that guy's a jag. Don't deal with him. You also have a jagger, which is a bush that has thorns in it. So to be completely off of everything, they would say, like, you know, you fell into a rose bush. You go, oh my God, I fell into a jagger bush. So that's a little bit different, but still a variation of the word. What else? Oh, there's also to jag someone, which means you're just kidding with them. And that could also be jagging him off, meaning that, like, you were kidding with him and pissed him off somehow. Like, oh, that guy jagged me off, took all my money and left. So there's that. And yeah, there's so many variations of the word. And I think over the years, even since I was a kid, it's kind of grown in huge popularity to something that only serious yinzers say to, you know, anybody now who lives in the area just uses the word. It's kind of become a phenomenon. And if you ever met Tim Gross, he's the kind of person that probably has been using it since the day he was born.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so, yeah. So yeah, that's a brief history of jagoff. And but the entire origin of the movie just came from Tim had a hat that our friend Ed Quillen made him, and it said Jagoff Massacre on it. And I questioned him about that and didn't know the guy at the time. We just had tables next to each other at the Horror Realm convention, and just talking about the hat led from there. That it was a movie idea that never came about, and next thing you know, we had a script, we had a camera crew, and somehow we were doing this stupid thing.
Hey, can you talk a little bit about you know, I'm gonna ask you the same questions about Blood Freak, but for Jagoff Massacre, how did you find your locations? Was it hard to get buy-in from actors? You know, how hard is it to get your co-writer, co-star, co-director, Tim Gross, an address?
That is the easiest thing in the world. That may have been his suggestion, if I'm remembering it right. He played the same character, Mrs. Lunford, in what the hell's the name of that movie? It was another independent production. The name of it is escaping me right now. But yeah, he already had the costume. He brought the costume over and jumped right in that dress like he belonged in it. And we may get him back in for the next movie as well. We're looking into it. But the two main actors in Jagoff Massacre, Chuck Connors and Brandon Snyder, were actually Chuck Connors has been one of my best friends since I started high school. He's in my wedding. And Brandon was another good friend from high school. And, you know, we always hung out together, drank, smoked a ton of weed, and those two would get into conversations in deep Pittsburgh accents and just go on and on all night and have everybody just cracking up. So when we had the script written, I already had Chuck in mind and Brandon. wasn't sure that I could get Brandon because he's kind of a fly-by-night type of person. You never really knew where he was going to be, but he happened to be in town and, you know, wasn't really doing anything. So we got everybody together, and I think it was over the course of about 9 months. You know, it was just kind of whenever we had a chance to all get together, we'd do it and find whatever location was open. Most of that movie is filmed in between mine and my mom's backyards. We just kind of, you know, flipped cameras around and made things look a little different. Used a lot of movie magic on that one. I think the only scene that we had to actually book a location is the bar scene at the very beginning. We worked out of a place called Sunny's over by my work, and we had to do it while it was open. It was an active bar, so a lot of the people you see there didn't know they were on camera. But yeah, that was the only place I think that we really had to work to get to. Everything else was whatever we had that night.
Excellent.
And that we say, John, that movie was filmed literally on zero budget. Everything that was used in it, we already had, other than the beer we had to buy to get the cast inebriated every night. The only thing I spent any money on was the bottle of Pert Plus shampoo that Chuck uses at the beginning. And I was mad about that. That was $4 I didn't have.
So what kind of reaction did you get from people, especially people that maybe, you know, I'm not from Pittsburgh, but I understood all the Pittsburghese, because I grew up in a part of Ohio that's close enough to Pittsburgh that a lot of it actually is bled over. Like, you know, we watch wrestling down by the creek and whatnot.
And I know you're a big Steelers fan. So.
Yeah, huge Steelers fan. But like, you know, what kind of reaction did you get from people? Because I remember being at a show and somebody coming up and you explaining it to them, and they had this puzzled look on their face. I believe they bought the movie and gave it a shot. But but yeah, I just interested in hearing that kind of feedback.
We got that a lot when we do conventions like Wasteland, things like that. There were people who didn't really understand or, you know, needed a lot of explaining. And I'm sure in those crowds, there were a lot of people who didn't like it. But hometown wise, regionally, it got the best response, I better than I could have ever imagined. When we started playing it at conventions around the area, I mean, we were packing these little theaters every time we'd play it. I could not believe how many people showed up for this thing. And, you know, Tim talks to everybody, knows everybody. And I think just word of mouth from him and people being his friend brought in a lot of crowds too. But it really was amazing. And really, as a filmmaker, that makes you think like, okay, I can do this. And I would love to keep doing things like this. That kind of reaction really just makes you want to keep going.
Yeah, it's a real Pittsburgh movie.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So I know you had some false starts between Jagoff Massacre and Blood Freak, but you did eventually get Blood Freak off the ground. For people who may not be in the know, this is actually a remake of an earlier notoriously bad, but like bad that people have to watch it and goof on it kind of movie from the 70s. And first question is why remake Blood Freak?
Well, why not remake Blood Freak? That would be my response there. No, the entire thing started, we were discussing remakes of movies and how I'm not one of those people who's necessarily opposed to remakes. There's some of them I think are great. Like we were just discussing, me and my fiance Courtney were talking about, she had never seen the My Bloody Valentine remake, and you know, the holidays coming up, and I'm like, well, that's what we're going to do. I love that damn movie. I love the original My Bloody Valentine too, but I think that's a great remake. But, you know, you also get into ones like the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, like things that just turned out terrible. And the conversation geared to, why are we remaking all these good movies, though? Movies that were always great don't really need remakes. Why aren't we remaking really terrible movies like Blood Freak? And so a little light bulb went up over my head, and I sat down one night and watched Blood Freak and went, I could rewrite this into a comedy and just make it hilarious. And that's what I did. It took about 8 months to write the script. And, you know, I'm kind of a perfectionist with those things. So there's a lot of retooling and rewriting jokes, but yeah, that's how it started. Just a conversation about why not remake bad movies. And people are doing that a lot too. I just found out there's a remake of Crazy Fat Ethel.
So, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I have it downstairs. Actually, I went and purchased this thing, but it's probably terrible.
It can't be worse than the original.
That's true. Right. And that's kind of what we thought about Bloodfreak too. Like, you know, as long as it was funny and we kind of kept it in the same vein that we did with Jagoff Massacre, where we wanted it to look like we're having a good time because we are having a good time and we want that to kind of come across on screen. So I just kind of figured, yeah, if we keep that same energy about it, it's going to be a better movie.
Yeah. And, again, I'm not trying to blow smoke or anything. You know me, I'm a bad movie aficionado. I've seen Blood Freak, the original one, a lot. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, your version is better. It's a lot more entertaining. And the original Blood Freak has several moments where it's boring and you manage to tighten everything up. So there's always something fun happening. So yeah,
I think that is a huge thing about making independent film that we've learned over the past few years is you don't want your movie to overstay its welcome. Tighten it up as much as you can. Leave a lot on the cutting room floor. If your independent horror movie about a giant turkey man is more than an hour and a half long, you're doing something wrong. Cut that thing down to 80 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So for Blood Freak, you know, and I get it. My question is, it's hard to get actors. And what I mean is I don't mean it's hard to get people to get in front of the camera. You actually have people that can act in this movie. They're delivering lines. And I thought it was very brave of you because you did go more comedy than anything else. And honestly, comedy is harder than drama, I think, because I've seen so many independent movies try to be funny and the actors just can't, they don't have the timing. But yet your dialogue and the way it's delivered by your cast is snappy. So how did you get the actors for Blood Freak? Because there's a lot of new faces.
Blood Freak, once again, most of these people are just friends of ours. And I none of them are professional actors. And most of these people, you know, have only worked with us or, you know, maybe one or two other independent movies. I think a lot of what you're saying as far as like comedic timing and things like that goes from all of these people know me and, you know the way I write and know the way, you know, that's comedy is just how my life is. I'm constantly joking around with people and things like that. And I think everybody, all my friends who read these kind of get how it's supposed to be. Plus, you know, we do table reads and things like that beforehand. So it's not like everybody's going in there flying blind, but I don't know, Joe, I really don't know an exact answer to that because none of these people are professional actors and none of them know a whole lot about timing or anything like that. It just somehow comes out okay.
I do want to point something out. What you just said, because I was actually going to ask you about it. But I will tell you, I have been interviewing independent filmmakers and asking similar questions for the last 30 years for fanzines and podcasts and websites. Do you know that hardly any of the filmmakers I've talked to actually do table reads?
Really?
They hand the script out. They tell the people to practice and they bring them on set. Seriously, they don't actually and I'm not kidding. For most of the independent filmmakers that I've actually talked to and asked these questions to about making their movies, I say, so what do you do? Well, I cast it. I give them the script. I have them come in. I introduce them to each other and then I throw them in front of the camera. So I think your table read makes a big difference.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, there's sometimes where there's actors who, you know, have busy schedules and aren't able to make it to table reads. And there are times that, yes, I'm just handing you a script and kind of standing to the side with you and telling you what it's supposed to sound like. But, yeah, for the most part, we like to do, you know, even before production, two or three different table reads, just trying to get everybody involved. Honestly, for the new movie we're doing, we just did a table read last weekend. Just like a minor thing. We went through the script, but not all of the cast was there yet. But yeah, I feel like that's definitely a big thing. I think it's good for people to have, you know, that's the point where you can take notes and really anything and try to develop a character while you're sitting there really thinking about it.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Locations for Blood Freak. I'm pretty sure at least the party scenes were at your house. Is that right?
Yes, sir. It's not very much different from locations for Jagoff Massacre. We liked what we had, and we already knew how to kind of work the space, so we really didn't change it up too much. There's a couple different ones. was the last scene with all the drug dealer with it, the drug dealer Jaboog's house. That's in Chuck's basement where we hadn't really worked before, and we had a great time with that space. It's huge and open, and he gave us the opportunity to fuck it up as much as we wanted to. So we really had a good time there.
Where do you shoot the stuff with Tim as the narrator?
That is a set we built in my garage.
Okay.
So we're planning on doing that a lot in the next film as well. My garage is a pretty open space. I don't park my car in there. And so we're going to come up with a lot of different sets and just build them down there. We kind of got that idea from our buddy Jorge De La Rosa, who he has a shed that he just constantly rips apart and rebuilds. And that's how he comes up with a lot of the sets for his movies.
I want to nerd out a bit here on the technical side. Because one of the things I noticed about Blood Freak is that it looked very sharp. It looks really good, and the lighting is really good. And what kind of camera, and how did you handle lighting and technical stuff like that? And who runs your camera on your set as well?
So for the two movies we've done so far, Bryce Katzman has done all of the camera work and editing. And honestly, those movies would not be the same without him. What I said before about like cutting things down and leaving a lot of stuff out, he's the one who tells me what we need to leave out. He's a fantastic editor and a cameraman as well. The guy has been working in different colleges doing IT service for years and different things like that. So he knows a lot of stuff on the technical end. As far as what kind of camera he uses, it's a Sony. I know that. But it's an older camera, and you're right. The movie turned out super sharp, and it's honestly the same camera we used for Jagoff Massacre. But the look of the two movies, I think, ended up totally different. So that may have been something, a decision he made during editing and sharpened it up a little bit. But
hey, so you just use one camera when you're shooting?
Single camera. Okay. excuse me. When we were filming Jagoff Massacre 2, which we never got to complete, sorry, choking on water here. We tried to do a two camera thing and we really didn't like how it worked out. It just, I don't know. I feel like single camera for an independent movie, just it tightens everything up a little bit. There's a lot less to work with during the editing process. And I think that helps.
Okay.
but yeah, as far as a lot of the technical side, that's, I don't know much about it. I'm just a schlub over here. But these movies would not look any good without Bryce. He's fantastic at everything he does.
Did you have a lot of Blood Freak finished before COVID screwed everything up?
Mm-hmm.
So how did it go for, I mean, trying to roll it out? The question I'm trying to ask is, and I've been asking this, or I'm going to be asking this, unfortunately, I think for most of the year for when I talk to independent filmmakers, but how does COVID in the pandemic affect you as an independent filmmaker?
So we lucked out in the fact that before the word COVID-19 even was heard of, we had Blood Freak finished and we were already in the editing process at that point. And I think when things got really bad, that was around the time Bryce had everything done and handed me the final copy of the movie. So that part was all fine. We didn't really have any problems there. But as far as a rollout goes or getting asses in seats to see this movie, it's been non-existent. I mean, the only way I've gotten anyone to see it so far is DVD sales, which haven't been bad because, you know, people do know us as a production company a little bit at this point. So we've done okay. But when it's all said and done and we're allowed to go back to conventions again, I'm going to roll Blood Freak out as though I just made it. There's still a lot I think that needs to be done. And, you know, I'd like to get it up on some more screens before we kind of move away from the project. So it's always going to be in the back of my mind that I need to, you know, before we move on to what we're doing next, I need to get some more people to see this thing. So, but yeah, it was kind of sad that, yeah, it all just happened right as we're like, okay, let's do this. And all of a sudden, there's nothing to do.
All right, I'm going to hit you with some rapid-fire random movie nerd questions. You ready?
Go for it. Yes, sir.
Favorite director?
Dario Argento.
Why?
Suspiria, I think, was the first serious horror movie I ever saw. or maybe it was the first time I ever saw a movie like that and really looked at it as a serious film. And I, to this day, I love everything about it. The lighting, the just the way everything works, the music, the just the tone of the film. I love that. And I think he replicated that in films like Deep Red, Four Flies on Grey Velvet, another favorite. His earlier Giallo stuff, the Animal series. And I just fell in love with that shit when I was in my early teens and never really stopped. So that's my guy.
Yeah. Cat of Nine Tails is really underrated, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I give that thing a rewatch about once a year.
I think I'm going to actually pick it for a future show and make Tim and Kyle watch it. Yeah. Yeah.
Make them watch good stuff, John.
Yeah. I've already made them watch Four Flies on Grey Velvet. I don't think Kyle was much of a fan. Favorite actor?
This is going to be a weird one. And it might not even be that he's a good actor. I freaking love Dan Haggerty. I do. I see the man and my face just lights up. I have no idea why. From Grizzly Adams, I watched when I was a kid and loved him there. And him doing crappy independent movies later on. I love the guy.
Have you seen him in the uncredited Pink Angels appearance?
I don't think I have, John.
Yeah, he plays one of the bikers. The Pink Angels is like the gay biker gang, and he's in one of the regular biker gangs, and they basically sort of convert them. So there's a scene of Dan Haggerty riding a chopper with like pink hair and pigtails and shit, wearing makeup. Yeah, Pink Angels. If you're a Haggerty fan, you need to watch it.
Oh my God, I don't know how this slipped under my radar. I just watched, what the hell is the one he did? It's called Mind Something or Other, and he's like a gay Hollywood executive.
Yes, that's like the murder mystery one, right?
Yeah, it's a terrible movie. It makes no sense at all. And like I said, there's nothing that I can even say like, yes, Dan Haggerty is acting chops are absolutely amazing, because they're not. He's not a good actor. I see the guy on screen and I'm like, cool, Dan Haggerty's here. Everything's fine.
Yeah, he plays Dan Haggerty in every movie he's in.
He absolutely does.
Yeah. the drunken Dan Haggerty Christmas movie Elves is awesome. I love that movie.
Every year at Christmas, man. That is a staple. Yeah. So
I also made Kyle watch that, and he hates Dan Haggerty. So.
Oh, I know. Me and him have a constant war going on about his stupid hatred of Dan Haggerty. I don't know what his problem is. Did you see the problem here is that Kyle doesn't like anything. He's got like the seven things he likes in the world, and that's it. Everything else sucks. Ooh. I don't know how he even considers himself a movie fan.
It's eight now because he loves Vivarium.
He loves Vivarium.
Seriously, we had this. He adores that movie. He keeps watching it. He loves Vivarium. So it's up to eight now. Yeah.
I would not have seen that coming at all. That seemed like somebody would absolutely hate.
Yeah, he picked it for the show, and Tim and I crapped on it. He's like, I love this movie. And I'm just like,
what was the other? He just told me and Courtney to watch one. What is it called? Chloe Grace Moretz is in it.
Oh, yeah. That's
I'm terrible.
Shadow in the Cloud. Shadow in the Cloud.
Yeah. We hated it.
Did you?
I did. I couldn't. It was just too far-fetched. And I love far-fetched stuff, but that was just too much, man.
I showed it to my wife, and my wife looked at me, and she's like, that was just weird. But the girl power moment at the end where she physically beats the crap out of the gremlin and then whips the girls out and breastfeeds the baby on the hill, that's how you end a movie, my man.
I'll give it to you. That was pretty good, and I laughed my ass off at that. If they would have taken out the entire subplot with the baby or anything else going on, and it was just Chloe Grace Moretz versus a gremlin on a plane, I'd have loved it.
Yeah, I could see that.
I didn't need anything else.
I did really like it. I did actually really like it. Favorite movie?
Favorite movie? Well, I kind of go back and forth on this one. If you want to talk about my favorite movie of all time, it would probably be Suspiria. As I said, I'm a giant Dario Argento fan. But sometimes, depending on which mood you catch me in, I'll flip it up and say Cemetery Man, because I Dell'Amore to people in the know. Because I think that is just the most beautiful horror movie ever made. So.
It is. God, it's weird. That's the first movie, Cemetery Man, because I can never get the other title correct.
No, it's fine.
Cemetery Man. Yeah, Cemetery Man actually is the first movie I can remember watching where I really got what I consider like an artsy film and really enjoyed it. But I'm also a huge Suspiria fan. Did you get a chance? I got a chance when they were where they had that traveling road show before COVID to see it in a small theater in 4K with the proper equipment. Did you get a chance to see that?
Yes, I did. Actually, it was one of the first dates I ever took my fiance on. We went to see that down at Row House Cinema, and I don't think she's a huge fan of it. They also played Hocus Pocus before that, so you know she got her fix of a movie that she loves, and I was just like enthralled by the damn thing, just the way everything popped in 4K, and I don't think she could have possibly cared less, but still, it was freaking amazing.
I had a similar experience. I took Jenny to see it, my wife,
yeah,
and she was like, eh, and it crushed me a little bit on the inside.
Right.
I'm
sitting there geeking out like, look how beautiful it is, the reds and the blues and there's orange in it.
And the audio, holy cow, uh-huh. The audio was amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah, that soundtrack, it gives me it doesn't even have to be in done that good. It'll still give me chills. I think Goblin is just absolutely incredible.
Oh. All right. So you mentioned Goblin, and we know that you live in Pittsburgh. And the one thing that hasn't come up yet is George Romero.
Okay.
So, you know, I totally get Suspiria being a favorite movie. That's completely legit. But what is your take as a Pittsburgh guy? Because there's kind of an assumption from outside of Pittsburgh, the people from Pittsburgh are going to be huge zombie nerds.
I'm really not a huge zombie nerd. I love George Romero. I really do. Dawn of the Dead would definitely be up in there. Dawn of the Dead and Night of the Living Dead are up in my top 25 of all time. Absolutely. But I think there was just a certain point, maybe about 10 years ago, that the zombie genre got so shoved down my throat that I got sick of it. And I think a lot of that, yeah, had to do with living in Pittsburgh. It was everywhere. There were zombie walks and zombie this and zombie that. And I just got tired of it. And every movie had zombies in it. And that's why I think, you know, if you watch Jagoff Massacre, yeah, Jagoff Massacre too. There's people that come back from the dead, but I never want to make a zombie movie. I just don't want to be that guy.
Well, and they're so overdone at this point.
Exactly. But don't get me wrong here. I think George Romero was an absolute genius, and what he did for that genre and horror in general, just it can't be beaten. He's really the reason independent film exists. So,
yeah, a lot of people don't remember and they don't consider it. A lot of newer, younger people don't realize that Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, they were actually independent films. They weren't in studios.
Exactly.
Same goes with Halloween and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
those movies became so iconic that, people do forget that, there was no studio backing for there. I mean, George Romero got completely screwed at the end with Night of the Living Dead. I mean, to this day, you can just grab a DVD burner, make a copy and sell it, and it's perfectly legal.
So. They changed the title and they put the copyright notice on the title card. And when they changed it, they didn't move it over. So it hit theaters and it became public domain.
Yep. Screwed him real good. But you know,
I think he did okay though.
I think he certainly made his fortune at some point in there. But yeah, absolutely. The man is a genius. It's just the zombie movies have not been my favorite of the genre for a very long time. And I think Walking Dead too, kind of that whole phenomenon killed me on it too.
Oh, as a movie fan, and I'm guilty of this. I'm guilty of this. Mm-hmm. But I was a zombie fan. I was a huge fan of zombie movies in high school, which for me was a very long time ago.
Yeah.
And I really loved the genre. And I actually kind of, in a way, I got more, which was nice. But in another way, when Walking Dead hit and everybody started making independent zombie movies and it became cool to be a zombie fan, I was kind of like, get off my yard.
Yeah, that is kind of how it feels.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when I'm like, hey, do you like Dawn of the Dead? And then, you know, I work at a college. I'm like, hey, do you like Dawn of the Dead? And the kid starts talking to me about how much he loves the movie. And about partway through the conversation, I realize he's talking about the remake. And I'm just like, oh, my God. So yeah. I have a threshold now, and this is another bad word for young people, but I am a gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. All right. So somebody, I love zombie movies. Hey, what's your favorite Fulci film? And if they can't answer that question, I don't need to talk to you.
You don't like zombie movies.
Yeah. If you don't know,
if you
zombie
haven't movies. Drunkenly watched The Killing Birds on a very late night in your basement, you don't know zombie movies.
Exactly. You haven't put your time in with some bad movies.
But that being said, I told you before, Cemetery Man is among my favorite movies, possibly mm-hmm. my favorite movie. And it could certainly be looked at as a zombie movie. So yeah, I guess I can't say I hate the genre.
It's ethereal. It's different. It's not so much about zombie movies. It's not so much about zombies eating people and stuff. It has zombies in it. But yeah, that movie, just to me, I'm just always been like, you know.
There's way more.
It's like Suspiria is not Hocus Pocus. It's not about witches.
Right, exactly. Honestly, if you look at the plot of Suspiria and take it for nothing but the plot, you could walk away from that and go, well, that was really lame. It was nothing.
Yeah.
It was just maybe some witches at a school.
Yep.
But
so what do you think about the other movies in Argento's witch series? You know, we've got Inferno, and then what, Mother of Tears?
Inferno, I love. I think it's damn near as good as Suspiria. There's a part of Inferno near the beginning where the girl drops a necklace or something down a hole in a basement, and then jumps down in the hole, and there's another entire house down submerged underwater. And like, there's no reason for that to even happen. It doesn't affect the film at all. It's just so cool. I go back and watch that over and over again. So yeah, I consider that one a damn good predecessor to Suspiria. But Mother of Tears, I watched one time when it first came out, wasn't super impressed with it. And I probably should give it a rewatch, to be honest with you, but it never really did much for me. I think Argento's newer stuff doesn't really affect me as much as the things, he was doing back in the 80s and even some of the early 90s.
Yeah, the digital effects in Mother of Tears don't hold up very well at all.
No, that's true too. He doesn't have the Italian studio backing he did back then. I mean,
no,
you know, back then he was a god in his home country. So,
yep. So what is up next for you in Drunken Yinzers? You just had mentioned that you were doing a table read for a new project. Can you give us any insight and clues as to what we can expect?
Oh, yeah. I'll give you all the good dirt here, John. So we are doing a film. It's called Tales from the Gross Side. I've always wanted to do an anthology movie, and this is, kind of my chance to do it. And the whole script was written during COVID and while I was under great duress from losing all my overtime at work. So I was really really writing some violent shit when I look back on it. So there's... It's a bit more effects heavy than our first two movies, as far as like there's some cool gore effects. But as we were reading through this thing the other night, it's freaking hilarious. It's so damn funny. We barely got through the table read. We're just cracking up the entire time. All of the stories are based on tales from Tim Gross's book, Tales from the Gross Side. So I kind of took those stories, which are kind of short to the point, just little snippets, and retold them, made them a little bit longer, and turned them into scripts. There'll be four stories and a little wraparound story that we wrote. And the cool thing about the wraparound story is you fans of Jagoff Massacre out there are finally going to get to see what the sequel would have brought you. So keep that in mind. It's not going to be a full sequel. You're not getting an hour and a half of Chosky and Stutch here, but we're going to wrap it up a little better than we did.
Excellent. So, you know, and I realize I'm a terrible interviewer because I forgot to ask you something about Blood Freak that I was really, really interested in.
What's that?
And the turkey head.
Oh, the turkey
the prop.
Head.
Yeah, you guys did an amazing job on that prop. Who did that? And You know, is it going to, when, God forbid, this is all over, and are we going to be able to see that at conventions?
We are going to drag that turkey head out as much as we possibly can. It is still sitting blood soaked in my basement. So, yeah, we're definitely going to start bringing that thing out with us, you know. But that's a really cool story behind that thing. My Aunt Susie is a freaking master of paper mache, and she's not into horror movies at all. She is honestly a very straight-laced nurse, but her son is autistic, and he is really, really into mascot costumes. So my aunt, you know, considering trying to help him out and, you know, give him something to do, learned how to paper mache and has made hundreds and hundreds of different mascot costumes for him. And they use them in, she lives in Oakmont, which is kind of like a suburb of Pittsburgh, and they do like Halloween and Christmas parades. So she does stuff for those every year, and he helps out with it and just makes him costumes all the time. So when I knew I needed a giant paper mache turkey head for this thing, that was the first person I went to. And I never thought it was going to turn out as good as it did. That thing, it's freaking incredible. The most unwieldy thing I've ever seen in my life. I felt bad for Chug every time he had to put it on. It's heavy. You can't see out of it. It's terrible, but it looked great.
Yeah, it really is like a fantastic prop, because, you know, you're watching a low budget movie and, you know, I have expectations, and then I see the prop and I'm like, God, that's better than the original one.
It really is. Like, yeah. She really went all out on that thing. She went out and like bought feather boas, took them all apart, and like individually stabbed each feather into the paper mache. The bottom part is more feather boas, so it kind of comes down and covers his chest. And each tooth she made individually and like stuck it up into the paper mache. I never even expected. She did that all for free.
It's beautiful. It really is beautiful.
I couldn't have been happier with the result of that
thing. It's such a great mask. You should consider Blood Freak too.
You know what? It's been on my mind, and I may screw around with some ideas for it, but we have a couple other movies that we want to do in the meantime. So there's a lot of ideas flying around Drunken Yinzers here. So we'll get around to them all.
Wonderful. So one final question for you.
All right.
Where can people find your movies and keep up news with your upcoming projects?
The best place to look for any news is to just go to our Facebook page, which is just search Jagoff Massacre in Facebook. There is no other one that's going to come up. And that's really our company site there, too. So anything Drunken Yinzers is doing is going to come up on the Jagoff Massacre page. As far as buying a copy of the movie, it's Drunken Yinzers Productions .company.site. And that's our Equid site, and you can purchase Blood Freak. Jagoff Massacre is now back in print. We have, I think, another 25 or 30 copies of that I had made. And all of Tim's books are available through there, too.
Excellent, excellent. And I will actually, when I put this up, and if you're listening to it, if you go back to the site where you pick this up, I will have links to both of those in the show notes. So,
awesome, brother. Appreciate that.
Too. Thank you very much for doing this. I very much appreciate it. And is there any final thing that you want to tell anybody that's listening?
Just, you know, everybody out there who's been affected by COVID-19, it's kind of turned them off to filmmaking or anything like that. Don't let it stop you. This is all going to go away soon. Just keep writing, keep coming up with good ideas. And everybody, when this, you know, things will get a little better, grab a damn camera and run out there and make movies. You know, it's the most fun you can possibly have for the least amount of money. So just do it. I'll watch them. John will watch them. Tim will watch them. That's what we do. So
put Massacre in the title and Tim will watch them for sure.
Absolutely. I feel like every Drunken Yinzers movie, we should just add Massacre in it. I'm pretty sure my fiance, Courtney, calls Blood Freak Massacre all the time anyway. So
yeah, it makes sense. Well,
or
hey,
Blood
thanks
Freak
again,
musical.
Man.
But
there you go. When's the first Drunken Yinzer musical coming out?
Oh man, I don't know. I gotta learn how to write music first.
All right. Hey, thanks again for doing this.
And brother, it's been great talking to you, and I miss your face. I can't wait to be able to see you again.
I don't think anybody's ever said they missed my face before. So I appreciate that.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
All right, thanks.
thank Dan for stopping by and having a conversation with us about drunken yinzers and all things Blood Freak, as well as Jagoff Massacre. On the next show, I'm going to have another filmmaker from Western Pennsylvania, Maddie Deering. She made a very fun little independent movie called Spirit Animal that I'm very excited to talk about. So until then, I hope everybody's masked up, stay safe, and we'll get through this crap. All right.